Chapter 11. The Pen. My experiences at the clinic and the effects it had upon me filled my mind. It almost seemed as though I had at last found the key to something that had puzzled and tormented me for a long, long time. I wanted desperately to say something, not merely to my family, not merely to my friends, but rather to everyone, to the world as a whole. There was something in me that urged me to communicate to others and make them understand. It wasn't just something about myself, but about all who had a life similar to my own. But how could I express what I wanted to say, what I wanted everyone to know? My hands were still of no use to me at all, and I still wasn't able to speak any kind of intelligible language outside the family circle. Of course, I couldn't go back on my promise to Mrs. Collis not to use my left foot. I had made a resolution, and I was determined to keep to it. Then suddenly I had an idea. I was sitting in the kitchen one afternoon, thinking how I could find a way of putting down all I wanted to say on paper, when I noticed one of my brothers sitting at the table and writing. This was Eamon, who was just 12. I leaned forward and asked him what he was doing. "Trying to write a composition for school," answered Eamon with a sigh. I saw my chance. I told him I'd help him if he did something for me in return. "Sure I will," he said confidently. "What do you want me to do?" "Write for me," I told him briefly. His face fell. "But I can't even do my own writing," he protested. "I wouldn't know what to say." "Fool," I replied. "You'll just hold the pen and I'll tell you what to put down." In the end, he agreed to my condition and I did his homework for him. "What do you want me to write down for you?" asked my brother innocently, the pen ready in his hand. "My life story," I told him. Poor Eamon let his pen fall on the table. "Your what?" he asked. I told him again, and this time he was quite silent. In the end, I got him to write for me for an indefinite period. We started that very afternoon, without any sort of preparation whatever. I was 18 when I began that first attempt to write my autobiography. My poor brother had written almost 400 pages of manuscript before I saw that if I went on like this, the book would go on forever. Its title typified the whole. I called it The Reminiscences of a Mental Defective. I meant that to be a nice piece of irony, a sort of punch on the nose for the doctors who had doubted my sanity at the age of 5. I was supposed to be writing my life story, but I didn't seem to be getting anywhere. It was just a forest of words with no clear path through it. I called myself a fool. I called my poor brother a fool. In fact, I called everyone in the house a fool because I couldn't write as well as I wanted to. The longer the book dragged on, the more irritable I became. I felt that I could write a good book if only I had someone to advise me, to show me how to write clearly and constructively, with no gaps between or holes in the middle. I needed a guiding hand, not only with brains, but with a heart as well. I thought and thought, but could think of no one. It looked as though I was entirely on my own. Then one day, as I was sitting moodily by the window in a bad temper, too disgusted with myself even to dictate any more, a name suddenly flashed across my mind, so suddenly that I almost fell off the chair. "Collis," I heard myself saying out loud. "Collis!" Without waiting to think, I yelled for Eamon. I made him get a postcard from the drawer and send it to Dr. Collis immediately. It was very abrupt. "Dear Dr. Collis, I'm trying to write a book. If you don't mind, please come and help me. Christy Brown." I hadn't seen the doctor for over a year, not since I had come back from London. I didn't know much about him except that he was the founder of the clinic and head of the Cerebral Palsy Association of Ireland. I had liked him from the moment I saw him. But after all, he was only a doctor, wasn't he? Could he help me write? Apart from being a nice man, who was he? The next day, I was in my little study at the rear of the house when the door opened suddenly and Dr. Collis came in, carrying a large bundle of books under one arm and a briefcase in the other. He dumped the books on the bed, put the case on the floor and turned round. "Hello," he said, coming over and sitting down on the chair at the opposite side of the table. "I got your SOS this morning. So you're writing a book? Well, let's see it." I had the manuscript in an old leather case under the bed. He took out the manuscript, put on his glasses, and began reading. As he read the first page, I saw him raise his eyebrows. He read the second and the third, and each time his eyebrows went higher. Then he threw down the copy on the table and looked up at me. "Yes, it's awful," he said. "The language you use may have been popular in the time of Queen Victoria, but..." My heart sank within me as I heard this. It looked hopeless. It seemed that I would never do what I now wanted to do more than anything else, write my life story. This passed through my mind as Dr. Collis sat before me, turning over the pages of that awful manuscript. Sometimes he grunted to himself. I sat with my head bowed. Suddenly he stopped and sat upright in his chair. I looked up in surprise. His face was smiling with approval. "Good!" he exclaimed excitedly, slapping the table with his hand. "You have written one sentence here that stands out like a rose among a lot of weeds. It shows me that you could write if you knew how. That's what I wanted to find out." Then he showed me the books he had brought and spread them all out on the table. There was a book of short stories and six volumes of a collection of famous literature from all over the world. "These will show you how to write good English," he said. He told me that if I wanted to be a writer, I must learn to write. Writing was as difficult as painting, he said, and to master it, one had to practice. He told me that no matter how difficult I found it, I had one good thing in my favour. I wanted to write, and that was as important as having a style, which I could develop as I went on. To do a thing really well, one had to like doing it. He then sat down and picked up the manuscript, looking at it again thoughtfully. He was silent for some time. I could hear the fire crackling, the clock ticking, and the faint sound of voices coming from the kitchen across the yard. At last he spoke. "Christy," he said, leaning forward with his elbows on the table, "all this," pointing to the manuscript, "hasn't been in vain. It may be unreadable, but it hasn't been a waste. It has given you lots of practice at thinking out ideas. If you still want to write your story..." He paused and looked at me questioningly. I nodded my head vigorously. I wanted to write that story above everything else. "Right then," he went on. "If so, you must begin the whole thing again." Now he began to talk, to teach me. I realised later that he was a teacher and had many students. "There are two first principles attached to the writing of any sort of story," he said. "First, you must have a story to tell, and secondly, you must tell it in such a way that the person reading it can live in it himself. Now, let me give you some concrete points. Whenever you can, use a short word rather than a long one. You have painted pictures with a brush. Try to do the same thing with a pen. Practice it. Just describe the room here, your queer chair, the picture on the smudged wall there, the broken mirror, the books, that coloured photograph." I listened as I had never listened before that evening, and many following, while Dr. Collis taught me how to write. I never forgot one thing he said. At last, he came over to me and shook hands. I knew then that I was about to start on the hardest job I had ever taken on. But with this man behind me, I knew that I would see it done one day. I knew it in his handshake.